CMC Pop Culture Man Children. Happy Pride, everybody.
Happy Pride.
Happy Pride for those who celebrate, which should be all of you.
Everyone, I would hope.
I would hope so. Happy Pride, Anthony.
Happy Pride, Mike.
I have to share with the audience something adorable that I just saw, which is we're recording in our parents' house, because this is where I live, because I'm living at the end of capitalism. And you walked in and you saw a plate of chocolate and you said to no one but yourself, don't mind if I do.
Yeah. So I've been on some don't mind if I do type shit for a while. It's just become like a thing I say when I see something delectable.
Don't mind if I do.
Don't mind if I do. And I do a little like thing with my fingers.
Yes,
too.
You did do a little thing. But you know, this is exactly correct. I mean, a plate of candy out in the open is an offer.
Oh, it is.
For sure. I mean, you used it correctly.
Yes. And I shout out to our mom, who always keeps a nice candy bowl by the front door.
Yeah. It's classy and it's correct.
It is. It is. It's just being a good neighbor, citizen.
One of my favorite jokes in a movie that's much maligned is in Ted 2. There's that running joke of they keep going to offices and there's candy. And Mark Wahlberg will be like, is this for everybody? And they're like, oh, no, that shouldn't be out. Yeah. And then he looks like sad. Well, so this is Pride Month. Today, you know what today's about because you clicked on it. Today, we are talking about our favorite queer texts.
Now, I want to talk about our journey to this topic.
Sure.
Like how we got here.
Yeah.
Because there was, I feel like more than usual, we had some clarifying questions for each other.
Yes, right. Yes. Well.
So how did you think of it when you were compiling your list? Tell me about your journey, and I'll tell you about mine.
I thought about texts. All right, so I'd say we have five each. Four out of the five I picked have explicitly queer characters, but that's not what I thought about. I didn't think about stories about queer people. I thought about texts that mean something to queer people. So, like, for instance, this is not on my list, but I thought about, like, Valley of the Dolls.
Okay, so that's so funny. I thought about that too. So I wrestled with this a bit because I was like, am I picking things that are important to queer people? And then I'll have a list, like you just said, that's like Valley of the Dolls, The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
Or am I picking things that have explicitly queer characters? And then I kind of landed there. And then I also did a little bit of struggling where I was evaluating, like, I'd have the instinct or the urge to put something on the list and then be like, is this really a favorite of mine or do I just think it's important?
Right.
And so then I tried to filter out, like, there are so many things that are important, but I don't know if I would consider them a favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, all right, so we should say I'm cisgendered, heteronormative, or heterosexual, I should say, guy. You are a cisgendered gay guy.
Yes.
Is that correct to say?
That is correct.
So that was another question I had, I should say. I said, can I do this? Do you think it's appropriate for me? I mean, I once taught a class on race, gender, and sexuality in the media.
Yeah.
And I felt uncomfortable doing that, too.
I taught an African-American literature course once.
Yeah.
And I approached it by just opening up the class by being like, hey, so I know I'm white.
You might have noticed.
Yeah.
I'm white. So I asked you, that was the first thing I asked you, which is, do you think you can do it with me? Do you think I can do it?
And I, who speak for all queer people, said,
no.
You're fine, Mike.
You don't speak for all queer people.
No, I just said, you know, you're an ally. You're in the community. You're the A.
And yes, I am. I thought the A was asexual.
I think it's asexual or ally.
Oh, okay. So I guess I should say I'm coming to it more intellectually. But anyway, going to back to the other question, the history of queer media, right? Media is not aimed at queer audiences. So it becomes about how you read it. So many of these important texts, like Mommy Dearest or something.
Yeah, I mean,
have yes. like, you know, these things that are appealing to a queer spectator who sees something in, they're reading something in mm-hmm. it that the straight people aren't getting.
Right. Well, that's the thing. And I mean, while I love all of those, obviously.
Yeah.
For some reason, I felt like I didn't want to end up with just a list of like five really campy things.
Sure. Sure. Sure.
And that, for better or worse, I mean, that might make my list super boring. I'll also say that I try to avoid tokenism as much as possible.
Sure, yeah.
So my list might be, based on who I am, be very much like pretty white and male centric. And I apologize for that.
Looking at my list, there's a lot of G in my list.
Yeah, I have a lot of G.
I've only got one thing that's sort of T. Or non-binary. So four of mine have...
Of course you're referring to Che Diaz.
Oh, yes.
The greatest character. Oh,
I didn't just have to pick five episodes with Che Diaz in it. And just like that. So four out of my five have explicitly queer characters, and one doesn't, but it has a famously coded queer character that... Even the director was like, this is a queer character. Okay. So
designing women, obviously, you're talking about Anthony.
Right. It's subtle. It's subtle, but not everyone gets it.
I have five. Mine. So four of the five have explicitly queer characters. One of them doesn't have characters.
Interesting.
It's a spoiler alert. It's a poem.
Poem. Okay.
And then I have three honorable mentions.
I have one honorable mention.
So...
All right, let's begin. Who wants to go first? We have five each, and that equals 10.
I'll go first. Should okay. I do... So I have more honorable mentions. Should I just, like, knock them out?
No, do them before number one.
Oh, is that how you do it? Okay.
That's how everyone and us have always done it.
Listen.
Is it too early for you?
It's very early. We are... It is 9:48 in the morning.
On a Saturday.
On a Saturday.
Which makes it earlier.
Yeah. May as well be fucking dawn. my number five is Cabaret, the musical.
Mm, okay.
How familiar are you with Cabaret?
So you say the musical.
I say, but I count the movie, even though the movie is
okay.
Has some major changes from the Broadway musical. I count them all as a piece.
Well, I saw it with you.
Yes, with me.
So that was the first time I saw it. We saw it in, what, the early 2000s? Molly Ringwald was...
Sally Bowles.
Sally.
I bought those tickets on a gay whim because I watched that movie. So here's the lore. Went to see Chicago as a young gay teen, closeted gay teen.
Yeah.
Life-changing.
Sure.
So then I was like, I must, like all other straight boys that are 17,
yeah,
I must look into Fosse's entire catalog.
I mean, every boy. Doesn't every teenage boy have a Fosse phase?
So I was deep in my Fosse phase, and I... Remember, like, it was around Chris. It was Christmas break, and back then, for the young folks listening, the Gen Zers, you used to get gift cards to Best Buy for Christmas and go and buy DVDs. So I bought.
You wouldn't buy washing machines. You'd buy
a DVD.
Well, now they're into DVDs again.
Are they? Well, it's like the way people are into vinyl.
Yeah.
So I went and I bought a digital video disc of a little film called Cabaret, and I watched it, and I immediately was like struck by it. Mm-hmm. And then that evening went on mom and dad's computer and bought a ticket, one single ticket to see the Broadway show.
Oh, wow.
Like 2 days later, because I wanted to see it live.
Journey. Yeah.
And it was $20 to get the highest seat possible. If you remember, we were like in the nosebleeds.
And it was like a Wednesday afternoon.
It was literally like I saw the movie and then I was like, I need to see this tomorrow. And that's what I did. And then I told mom and dad, or I told mom, and mom was like, you're not going to the city by yourself to see a play. Like, we'll get a ticket from Mikey and Mikey will go with you. So you and I went together. We took the express bus.
Yeah. Oh wow. God, it was that long ago. I thought we were in college. Long.
No, I was in high school.
I was in college.
That's why I wasn't allowed to go to the city by myself.
Wow.
We went and we saw it, and I remember both of us really liking it.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I like the music. I don't love the movie.
Oh, I love the movie.
I like Liza.
I think it's Liza's best performance.
I don't love, is Michael York? Is that
Yes, him? Michael York.
I don't know. There's something about the movie, the show at least, the show is more fun. It's like more of a party. I don't know. There's something about the movie.
Well, the first act.
I know. It gets. I don't know. Something about the movie I don't like.
When was the last time you saw it?
And I found myself completely intrigued by, Liza's dead tooth. So I kept in every scene. I was like, ah. I was like, all I was looking at was her tooth.
Stop.
Her dark tooth. I'm sure she's had it fixed. You know, many many moons ago.
I'm obsessed with the have you seen the clip of her singing like damn?
Yeah.
Damn.
I'm not putting her down. I had a dark tooth for many years.
I gave you that dark tooth.
Yeah. I have this obsession with teeth in general, and I feel like you look at old movies and part of the realism is teeth, whereas now everybody has these veneers. Fucking awful, and they're all awful.
What's funny is yet you're mocking her dead tooth.
I'm not mocking it. I'm just saying I was obsessed with it.
You should be the person to say, like, oh, I miss the way people used to look with their real teeth.
I am saying
like
that.
Like Ben Affleck's horrible
I am real saying
teeth.
That. I'm just saying when I saw it, it was all I was looking at. Anyway.
He took liberties with the movie.
Yeah, I don't love the movie, but I like the music and I like, you know.
The music it's just banger after banger.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And an explicitly queer character based on Christopher Isherwood, who wrote the book that it's based on.
Is he less queer in the movie?
He is, no.
Or no? Okay.
I mean, it's a little bit more subtle. Like just recently, I think it still is on Broadway now.
Yeah.
And I saw it recently, or it just closed. And it was great. I saw B.B. Newirth was in it and Adam Lambert. It was amazing. And there's like full on, like, you see him like kissing men and sleeping with men in the show. Yeah. And I think it's just implied more in the movie.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I love Cabaret. That's on my list. It means a lot to me. It's one of my favorites of all time. So that's my first on my list.
It's one of your favorites of all time, really.
Yeah, it's funny. And we went to see it. Bobby had never seen it. We saw the most recent, like I said, Broadway revival. And he didn't love it either. He was like, I like the music. He was like, the performances were amazing. He was like, but it was so sad.
Yeah, it's very sad.
It's depressing. It's really depressing.
It's depressing to see it now.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen like now. Clips of like, so there's like famously one of the songs is like, if you could see her through my eyes.
Yeah.
And it's a woman or it's a person like dressed like a gorilla wearing a dress.
Mm.
And then the last line is, if you could see her through my eyes, she wouldn't look Jewish at all.
Mm.
And then I saw a clip of like, I think it was Adam Lambert actually like doing that joke, which that joke is not supposed to get a laugh.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be like silent.
Yeah.
And somebody in the crowd laughed and he turned to the left and he was like, this is not a joke.
Yeah.
But he stayed in character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah,
he was the MC. Okay.
So it's during right now, especially because Cabaret is so much about like the insidious slow rise of fascism.
Yeah.
And like one thing at a time being taken away and dismantled until all of a sudden it's everywhere.
Right.
And people there's one scene in the play that's not in the movie where like a guest is invited over to a party and then he like just casually takes off his jacket and he's wearing a swastika.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the whole crowd went,
yeah.
And it's like, and he's like, why would, so the host is like, you've got to leave. And he's like, why would I leave? Because I love my country.
Uh-huh.
And then someone else in the party is like, I'm with him. Mm. It's about time that people started speaking up about proud of being German. And it's like, this is so scary.
I know. Oh, well, yeah. That's upsetting.
Yeah.
But
it's got everything. It's got queer stuff. It's got history. It's got great music.
Are you going in any kind of order? Or are you just
not
randomly
really
going?
Not really.
Okay.
No. But my number one, I think, is like my favorite. When we make these lists, I generally like don't go in any order, but I save my favorite for last.
I won't save my favorite for last, but I'll save the one I think is the most important for last, even though that's not a list of important things.
So you're going to high road me.
I'm not going to high road you. No, you. So another thing I was worried about was that you'll find my list stupid.
I would.
And not. I don't know why. There's no All such right, thing. So my first thing is Steven Universe.
Oh, never come seen on,
you
it.
Just said. All right, so Steven Universe is an animated series.
Is this the queer coded character?
Well, I'll get into it. Hold on.
Okay.
So Steven Universe is. It ran from 2023 to. When did it run from, actually? I want to make sure.
2013.
To what?
Five seasons.
2013 to 2019. Okay. So Steven Universe is an animated series created by Rebecca Sugar, who had worked on Adventure Time. It's very well known. It's become a joke as like a certain type of queer or super liberal person. Like SNL had that. They have that those characters that come on Weekend Update of like the couple that doesn't make sense, and it's like the bro-y guy and the nerdy girl, and he's like, "Yeah, I met her. She was sitting at the bar watching episodes of Steven Universe on her phone." So Steven Universe is the idea is Steven is a little boy who lives with a bunch of adult women. Who are the crystal gems? They're aliens from another planet, a planet that has only female inhabitants.
Okay.
So any relationship is gay. And his mother was a crystal gem who fell in love with a human. And
a human woman?
A human man.
Okay.
Much to the chagrin of one of the other crystal gems. And had him. So he's the first part human, part crystal gem person. And
the first, the and only man, crystal
right,
gem.
Yeah,
okay, or male,
right. So and they're raising him because he's going to come into his power and save the world and all that. And so the really interesting thing about the show is that the crystal gems have this ability called fusion, where if they're vibing with another person, sometimes it's just talking, sometimes they're dancing. It depends on how it happens. If they're vibing with another person, they could become one with them and become like an amalgam of both of them.
Okay.
And they did a lot of interesting things where they would have characters merge and then they'd get like a guest person to voice them. Cause the fusion would almost be like a different being altogether.
Okay.
That had both of their experiences. One of the first big, like, spoiler alert, one of the first big, like, holy shit shocks in the show is at the end of, I think, season one. One of the main characters that we've always known, they're all captured, and Steven wakes up in the spaceship, and he meets these two characters we've never met, and he helps them escape, and they run to each other and hug, and they become the character we've always known.
Oh, and that's you're
like,
so cool.
And it's a huge – everyone who's ever watched the show is like, oh, my God, that's the moment. Because you realize that person has always been a fusion that decided to live as one.
Huh.
So Steven – his best friend is a human girl named Connie, and they're best friends as kids, and then later on in the spin-off series, they're boyfriend and girlfriend. But at one point, they're in there's an episode where they're dancing, and they fuse, and they become a non-binary character named Stefani, okay. Which is both their names together. And Stefani, weirdly, is an adult character, even though they're both kids.
Okay.
So, like, people hit on – there's weirdness to it, but I think on purpose – and you'll see Stefani in fan art. It's like the big queer non-binary sort of almost icon of the show.
Huh.
And it's just everything about it, sensibility-wise, is extremely loving and queer, and everybody deserves love and everybody deserves respect. You know, there's a great line.
And it's funny?
Yes, it's very funny. And it's very cute. And there's but it's for kids for sure.
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines is there's the male character who's the kid's father, the human. There's a flashback of how he falls in love with the mother, and one of his friends is telling him how to talk to her, and the dad goes, "Women are people," and people love that line too. It's just I'm a sucker for, and I know this is where conservatives go, "You're brainwashing us." As if you could brainwash people into having empathy. But I'm a sucker for any text that just, without grandstanding, just says simply, this is the way it is.
Right.
Like, caring about people is the right thing. That's not a political act. Giving a shit about other people is not a big deal. Mm. You just should.
Right.
And it is good for kids to see that. So Steven Universe is great.
Where is it streaming?
It's currently streaming. I'm not sure. It was done by Cartoon Network. I did watch it streaming.
Is it in that like CalArts style?
Yes. The much maligned CalArts style.
I have no problem with it.
No, I have no problem. First of all, it's a now I'll go on a rant. It's a statement that means nothing because CalArts had been a here's the whole history of CalArts. CalArts had been a fine art school until Walt Disney came, built them a new building, infused a ton of money into them, created classes that would funnel students right into the Disney. So to say something's CalArts is nonsense because all of the animation industry is CalArts. From Disney to Hanna-Barbera to...
When people say CalArts, they don't mean like the CalArts. They mean like the style associated with that.
But I'm saying that makes no sense because that style is from CalArts people in the early 2000s, but also so is every single other style.
Yeah. I'm talking about like the...
They call it Bean Mouth.
2010.
Very simplistic, yeah. But that's just this, you know, I don't know. That becomes a whole bro-y thing.
I don't know why people don't like it. I think it's cute.
Well, it's one of these things where people are like, oh, well, it's for some reason because it's cute, it's not good. I don't know. I don't understand the way some people think.
Like my favorite font, Comic Sans.
Sure.
Much maligned.
Yeah. Much maligned.
Everything I write during Pride Month will be in Comic Sans.
Yeah. All right. What's your next one?
My next one is, interestingly, another Christopher Isherwood joint.
Well, who's Christopher Isherwood?
He was a writer. He wrote Cabaret.
Oh, he wrote Cabaret?
Based on his experiences.
And Fosse directed the stage. Did Fosse direct the movie as well?
Fosse directed the movie.
He didn't direct the stage show.
Not the stage show.
Oh.
I feel like he may have choreographed the stage show.
Mm.
This is A Single Man.
Oh!
The book. For this, I'm saying the book and the movie.
I've only seen the movie. What's the movie? Tom Ford?
Tom Ford's directorial debut.
And he's like a designer.
He's a fashion guy. So incredibly stylish movie.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Now, this is like a... important queer text.
It is, but it's also a favorite of mine, so it made the list.
So why?
Well, I think a lot of favorites have to do with when you first encountered them.
Of course.
So I feel like I was... Something about the fact that I was a new teacher when this movie came out. I was entering the field of education, and it's about an English professor living in the... I believe early 60s.
Yes.
Whose partner dies horrifically, but he can't. I was also working in a place where like I couldn't be open. He can't come out. So it's about somebody who has to continue living their life as if nothing has happened, even though their world is ending.
Yeah.
And like can't openly grieve.
Wow.
That just really spoke to me.
Right.
And I the book was really great, and I think the movie is just like so captivating.
Do you think it's like a seminal text in terms of the closeted experience?
Yes. So I think that's what I'm getting at. And the fact that the title is A Single Man, like the world reads him as just a bachelor.
Yeah, a swinging bachelor.
Right. Right, like, well, you know,
we're a certified bachelor.
We're jealous of you, you know, like,
yeah.
Meanwhile,
he's the person he loved.
The
died.
Person he loved the most died horrifically, like in a horrific car accident.
But you can't take bereavement.
No,
you can't even. Talk
you just
about
have to
it.
Continue going on.
Yeah,
that is so like
that's brutal.
Yeah, and I just think the movie especially looks so great. Colin Firth is so great. Julianne Moore is so great. As like this, she's kind of like his hag, but also like seems like she's very attracted to him and is like throwing herself at him at points because she's very lonely.
But I don't remember. Does she know? She knows though, or she doesn't know?
I think she like knows but doesn't know. I think it's like an unspoken thing.
Okay.
And the soundtrack is really, really great. It's got a great score. I really, really love it. I think it's like a movie that was like yes, importance with a capital I, but I feel like people don't talk about it a lot.
What do you? It's so interesting the figure of a professor, because as you're describing that, I realized that the whale takes a lot of itself from this text, mm-hmm. except they just make it. In his grief, he became morbidly obese.
And thus a disgusting person.
And yeah, I have real problems with
that. I've never even seen it because I just, from the discourse, knew I would hate it. And I like Brendan Fraser. I'm happy he's having a resurgence.
He's the only thing that's great in it. And he elevates it so you have empathy for a character that the story doesn't have empathy for.
I think, I've said this before, we could do a whole episode on this. I think like fat phobia is the last phobia that like everybody still just seems cool with. Yeah. Where it's like, oh, look, he's disgusting because he's fat.
Right. Well, what made me so upset about the whale, another side rant, is that...
Well, and he's also, he's a queer character.
Yes, yes, exactly, yeah. The thing that made me so upset about the whale, that bothered me about the whale, was that it was touting itself as being not fatphobic, mm-hmm. but it was a freak show. If you see that movie, it's a freak show.
Yeah.
And, like, just be a freak show.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, don't fucking... act like you're doing something good here. Like, you're not. Like, that's what really annoyed me about it, was, like, you're not a...
Right.
Like, why are you grandstanding? You are part of it.
Right. It feels like... It's like...
Having
it feels like forced exhibitionism, watching that movie, right?
Yeah.
Like, especially, like, you see... I mean, like, the gaze of the camera takes you to, like, intimate moments where he's, like, masturbating,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
like,
it's horrible.
It's horrible, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's horrible.
So, but To your earlier point, the figure of the professor, why is that?
Because they're erudite. Because they're thoughtful and therefore gay. Thoughtful, erudite.
Yeah, and therefore, yeah. Quiet chalk hands, a man is speaking. you know, men in education.
Right, right. Oh, right.
Our, you know, female-dominated profession.
Yeah.
You've seen the movie?
Yes, I have. This movie. Not a long time. Probably around when it came out. What was that, like 2007,
2000? I think it was 2010.
Okay.
2011.
I have seen the film, yeah. No, I remember liking it, yeah.
There's a really cool part where there's some really cool, beautiful shots in it. And there's one where he's walking through a drive-thru that's showing Psycho.
Yes, I remember that.
And something about the juxtaposition of him and then like the image of like Janet Leigh behind him, huge and blown up, is really cool.
What about that new book, Marion?
I ordered it.
I'm
excited. I like fun, like, remixes.
Yeah, because it's not just... So this new book, Marion, coming out, it's like Marion from Psycho, which is interesting because her name's Mary in the novel. So they're specifically dealing with the film.
The movie.
But it's not just the story from her point of view. It's like a remix where it's like she's a murderer.
She's a murderer.
She's a serial killer.
Norman was her first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I gotta read it.
Girl boss.
Absolutely. No, I love shit like
that. Yeah, I ordered it. I ordered a physical copy. I can lend it to you when I'm done. It hasn't released yet.
Yeah.
It drops June 2nd.
Okay, that's a good one. That's a good one. What should I do next? Let's do kind of an obvious one. The Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay.
Specifically the film from 1975.
Yes.
This
was gonna be on my list, but I knew... It was going to be on yours, so I didn't put it on mine.
So this is like, it's almost like if you know anything about it, what can I even say? You know why it's on this list. It's just so important.
Yeah.
And so important to fandom and so important to cosplay and so important to, you know, I mean, the mantra of don't dream it, be it mm-hmm. is like something people tattoo on their fucking faces. Like, It helped just generations of people be like, yeah, it's fine. You know what I mean?
I love part of what I love about the Rocky Horror Picture Show or Rocky Horror Show is the conceit is that they're aliens.
Yeah.
So because like gender is something we do on Earth that we made up.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't get it.
No, they don't get it.
They're like, I'm going to wear what looks good and I'm going to do what feels good.
Right.
And that includes I remember once you were saying like, you'd love to see a version where he's fat.
Yeah.
Because it's like he should also like to eat.
Yeah. Well, full disclosure, it's because I wanted to play that part. Oh, okay. So I was like, it would be really cool. Wait, it would be really cool if it were like some like fat guy. some fat Italian guy. It would be great, don't you think?
it's such a great it's just like such a great idea that they, yeah, no, that they come idea. Here and they're like, oh, like we're just going to do what's pleasurable.
It's also like in fandom wise, right? Like a very early meta thing. You know what I mean?
Oh,
which is
yeah.
so pop. Like the fact that it's like the opening songs, science fiction double feature, is just references to classic sci-fi and horror movies.
So here's a question for you. Do you consider Rocky Horror camp? And here's why I ask, because a teacher I work with at school,
yeah,
we work closely together, taught it, and yeah. we were working on the unit together, and we integrated Susan Sontag's notes on camp yeah. into it.
Okay.
But according to Sontag, if something knows it's camp, it can't be camp.
Right. I go with Sontag on this.
So I think Rocky Horror technically can't be, because it's trying to be.
But, yes. So, yeah. So camp is about the reading from
right.
a queer audience member.
Right.
Right? Mommy Dearest is true camp.
Yes.
Right? Because
it
it's
was
not
it was trying to be a heavy drama.
Right. And it just it doesn't hit it.
Yeah.
Right? But that being said, I think there's a different level of camp that's a playfulness, because we don't want to count out But I'm a Cheerleader.
Or O'Mary.
Yeah, yeah. Or, yeah, things that are explicitly playing with camp.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Or I think maybe we could even delineate like camp from like campy. As like
yes.
campy is like you're playing at camp.
Yeah.
Where true camp is like this was unintentional.
The last thing that I saw, and you know, this isn't something I'm always looking out for, but the last thing that I saw that I was like, this is actual camp, was House of Gucci. Because I think Ridley, yeah. I think Ridley Scott thought he was making like a pretty good drama, and the rest of us were like, "Come on!" Like everyone's like, "I'm making a pizza,
Gucci."
Yeah, a fucking
especially
Jared Leto in it as like the weird uncle is so fucking.
I think
over
Lady
the
Gaga
top.
Knew the assignment.
Well, you could argue that her whole persona has something to do
yeah.
with camp.
Yeah,
but to me that was camp because I don't think. The director's intentions were camp.
No. You know what else is another good example of, like, recent camp? That Lifetime movie Liz and Dick.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes.
Like, was supposed to be, like, Lindsay Lohan's comeback, one of her comebacks.
Right.
Finally, who knew? Her real comeback could be Freaky...
Freaky or Friday.
But it was one of her, like, early attempts at making a comeback, and they were like, she's going to play Liz Taylor. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
And she went for it, and it's so camp.
This is the part she was born to play. Also, the music is incredible. I mean, I'm not a huge musical guy, but, like, this is a musical I've always liked. It's rock and... I mean, like, I've never seen... It's on Broadway right now, which I want to see it.
I want to talk to you about that.
It looks like a cool production.
I want to ask, how do you feel about Meatloaf being like it takes a little bit out of it for me?
Oh, that he was a conservative.
He became MAGA before he died. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's dead now, so I don't care. No, when they die, it's like yeah. Well, they're dead now. They can't harm anybody. I mean, Meatloaf is a good performer. I don't know. He never struck me as smart. And not even he even in the cast. Well, in the play. Wait, was he in the play or just in the film? I can't remember. In the play, the same performer plays Eddie and the uncle.
Yes.
But in the movie, it's two different people. But Eddie is supposed to be the only, like, stereotypically, like, masculine, mm-hmm. Hetero guy. Even though he does fuck Frankenfurter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, everybody's fucked Frankenfurter, right?
Right. Right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What's your take on the discourse surrounding callbacks with this new Broadway production? It's been a big, like, point of controversy in the Broadway online community.
So the film, which became famous as being shown at midnight at the Waverly, which is now the IFC, there was callbacks. Like, people would throw things at the screen. People would say things back. I do think that as the decades went on, it got to be too much. Like... towards the end, like, if you listen to a recording of it, like, it's like, you're doing a whole different thing. Like, they're like, you couldn't enjoy the movie at all.
Right. I've never been.
There's a DVD that has an audio commentary of the callbacks, and it's just too much.
It's a lot. It's
it
weird.
Got worse
it's not,
over time.
And it's not all funny or smart. Some of it's just dumb.
And some of it is making fun of it.
Yeah.
Which
is... I take issue with that.
Yeah.
Like when you're not smarter than this.
Yeah.
It's like when we went to see a midnight screening of Beetlejuice and somebody really misread the room, remember? And
yeah.
she tried to do like a yelling at the screen thing, and we were like, yeah, shut up.
Yeah, no, Beetlejuice is better than you.
Yeah.
So yeah, the new stage production, they don't, it's weird because so it's, I can see why it's organically happening.
So here's what happened. So they opened, I guess not anticipating.
They should have.
They should have. But audience members came, especially because it's kind of like, there was like a big, in the early 2000s, like big Broadway musical version of it.
No, it wasn't early 2000s. Like, it was 2000 and it closed when 9/11 happened.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
This is like back to its roots. Like it's a very small,
like very
stage,
sparse,
very
yeah.
sparse stage,
almost like
right?
a rock concert yes. slash show.
So that invites more of like engagement, I guess. And yeah. people, audiences, right from the beginning, started doing the callbacks, and they didn't quite know how to handle it.
Yeah.
So then they put out a statement and started putting like inserts into the playbill saying like, "Please respect the performers," and not don't do that. Mm. And then a lot of diehard fans are like, "That's disrespectful to us." And then others are like, it's a live performance.
But
you're ruining it for people who haven't seen it before.
I guess I see it both ways. But I feel like if I were a producer of this show, I would say let it happen. Work it into it. Respond to it on stage.
But to your point earlier, though, if you're just calling out constantly.
Well, no, it shouldn't be constant. It should be like the major ones. Like, I don't know. But you're right. It is hard. It is hard.
It's hard.
It shouldn't be too
and
much.
And especially like if you're going, you know, like you're a tourist. You're going to see it and you've never seen it before.
Yeah.
And it's like you're whatever.
Yeah.
Like you're Brad and Janet sitting in the audience. Like, what's happening here?
Yeah. Yes, that's true. You're Brad and Janet. Yeah. There are Brad and Janets that go yeah. see this.
So I think it's interesting. Some people seem really mad about it.
Well, because there's always been a parasocial relationship between the audience and this text. Although there weren't call outs, I believe, in the original. Show.
No, that came from the midnight showings.
Yeah, it came from the film. So I don't know. Maybe they should be like, you can do this and that, but not mm-hmm. this. I don't know. Then you're like parsing. Yeah. I don't know. I could see it every which way.
I do want
to see that show.
Yeah, I've also heard, like real, the reviews I feel like from people have been real bipolar. Like people either say it's amazing or like it was horrible.
Hmm.
So I'm curious to see.
Yeah, I'm curious too. All right, what's okay. your next one?
My next one is But I'm a Cheerleader.
But I'm a Cheerleader.
Which is just a great comedy that's playing with
I've only seen it a handful of times.
Oh, I've seen it so many times.
I showed it in that class I talked about.
And did they like it?
Yeah, I said, well, they loved it.
Oh my God, so good.
They do love it.
You know who's so underrated in that movie? Michelle Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Who shows up and is like, you're a lesbian.
I love it. I feel like that was the first time we all met the not in drag RuPaul.
Yes. Which is so, what a choice.
Yeah.
To have him play that character.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's, for those who haven't seen, it's about a conversion camp.
Which is like, somehow still a thing.
Also a camp movie about a camp.
Come on.
Chef's kiss.
Come on.
Which is still a thing, but it's like the most extreme, ridiculous version of it. Which,
yeah.
I mean, it is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And like all the girls have to wear pink, all the boys have to wear blue.
Yeah.
And the main character is played by
Natasha Lyonne.
Natasha Lyonne.
Incredible.
Incomparable. Natasha Lyonne. Who discovers that she has that great line where she's like, I'm a homosexual.
Yeah. Right. The butt of the cheerleader comes from her.
From her. But she's like, but I'm a cheerleader.
How could I be gay? I'm a
right,
cheerleader.
Right. And then she starts a relationship with a character played by Claire Duvall, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's just so
funny. Kathy Moriarty
she's
coaches.
So good.
When she's coaching the boys on how to have sex, she's like, yes. get in there.
yeah.
Finish. You don't care about what she wants.
And her son is,
right.
is there and he's like super hot. And obviously so much of the fun is like that it's obviously not working.
Of course, right.
So
right.
like her son is like the groundskeeper and he's like super jacked and hot. Like all the boys are always staring at him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's like showing them like how to work out at one point and they're all like sweating and passing out.
Yeah.
She's like inherently camp, Kathy Murray.
Oh
like,
yeah.
What a great villain she is in Casper.
Absolutely. Casper is a tour de force for her.
I like that. What I always really appreciate about But I'm a Cheerleader, again, watching it uh-huh. as a teenager who is still closeted, is that it has a happy ending.
I don't remember the ending.
What's
the ending?
She ends up, they end up together, and they all just, like, leave the camp.
Okay.
And yeah. And Kathy Moriarty gets her comeuppance.
Oh, boy. Conversion camps is a crazy
thing. My God.
Have you ever seen, I'm sure you have, it's old school viral, but, like, that clip of, like, that young pastor who's like, I'm not gay no more. I don't like mans no more.
Oh, my God.
You ever
see that? No. Is it real?
Yes, it is.
Oh, God. You know what's funny about that? All those people end up
right,
having sex with men again. Or
right.
Women.
Well, it just, it's basically, there's no, there isn't a such thing as conversion. All it could do is go, all right, so you're going to make the choice to not have any sexuality. So, you know, it's just, it's crazy.
But hey, they're allowed. That was upheld by the Supreme Court. They're still legal.
Of course, of course. Well, yeah. The Supreme Court is supreme.
Yeah.
You've
only seen it a handful of times, huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. It was like one of those, it's like a cable movie.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
It was on all the time.
On a lot.
And a banging soundtrack.
Yes, yes, yes. What year is that?
Hold on. I feel like it's like 99.
Mm-hmm.
99, yes.
99, nice.
Directed by Jamie Babbitt. Oh, Clea. Sorry, I said Claire Duvall. Clea Duvall.
Mm-hmm.
Queer icon. Clea Duvall.
Nice.
Did you ever watch Veep?
No.
She's on Veep as...
is she?
She's part of her security detail that she ends up marrying her daughter.
That's fun.
It's fun. Natasha Lyonne is... What a career she's had. Can you believe she was in American Pie?
Yes. The most aggressively
straight movie
ever.
Yeah.
The movie that gave us the term MILF.
Yes. Oh, my God. And even in that movie, though, she plays, like, the woke character.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Michelle Williams is in it as her, like, sheer friend.
Well, Michelle Williams is low-key, like, one of the best actresses ever.
Oh, my God. She's amazing.
And every couple of years, people, like, will see her and be like, God, you guys know she's, like, the best ever? And then forget it again.
I just recently read something where I think it was Stephen Colbert. Somebody was like, they interviewed her and they were like, I've never been more enamored with a person.
Really?
Than I was with Michelle Williams.
She does seem enchanting.
Yeah. God, it's so good. And it's a cult classic.
Yeah.
Which is also queer.
Yes, right, of course. I think I'm going to change my order a little bit because I do want my last one to be my most favorite.
Oh, this is interesting. Hold on. I just learned this. It was originally rated NC-17. Babbitt made cuts to allow it to be rated as R.
I bet it wasn't even that bad.
Yeah, she said when interviewed in the documentary film, this film is not yet rated. She criticized the MPAA for discriminating against films with homosexual content.
Right, right, right. Something that if it were straight, they would let, but if it's gay, somehow it's inherently more offensive. I remember that.
Something about cult. I said cult classics are inherently queer. They're also, like, a lot of them are not well reviewed at first.
Sure.
Which I guess leads into cult classics. And this, it's funny, I was going to say the movie has a John Waters. You could tell John Waters is an influence on it. And it says here, it was conservative critics compared it unfavorably to the films of John Waters. And criticized the colorful production design.
Oh, my God. Talk
like,
about
this,
not getting it.
Hey, this guy, I know. Like those, weren't like contemporary critics like not sold on The Wizard of Oz either when it first came out?
No, it's ridiculous. There's nothing more hilarious than that shit.
Yeah.
Especially,
you know, do you ever go back and like read reviews from people you respect who gave bad reviews to good things?
Sure, yeah.
Like Ebert?
Yeah, I love Ebert, but I also love slasher movies and he hated slasher movies.
Yeah, he was of the opinion, they both were of like that violent films are not good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they both liked, well, Ebert liked Scream 1, Siskel didn't, but they both liked Scream 2.
Ugh. Anyway. No, I love them, but they were wrong about things.
Yeah.
They were way too moralizing. Well, again, I think the cult classic thing is again, it's about the reader, right? It's like, for something to become a cult classic, it means those few people that are reading it in this one particular positive way, they have to find each other. And that's why, like, something like Rocky Horror, why these people are mad that they're not allowed to shout back, because it's like, this is our thing.
Yeah.
You know, we have been here longer than you. Right. I'm assuming if they're really old school fans.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me do, All right, so I'm, like I said, I'm changing my order because I wanted to leave the important one for last, but I'll just do the important one now because I want the last one to be my favoritest, most favoritest.
Can I guess what your important one is going to be? Is it Brokeback?
No, sorry. It's not. It's not on my list.
Ooh. Homophobe.
I'm sorry. All right, so my next one is...
Mike famously thinks Crash deserved the best picture Oscar that year.
I mean, it was the best movie of the year.
Talk about fumbling the bag.
I know. Well, is that... That's just... Right now, Bruce Valanche has a podcast about the Oscars, and it's just about how bad the Oscars
are. Well, I just read an audiobook about the Oscars called The Oscar Wars, and how... It's all campaigning.
Yeah, it's nonsense.
It's lobbying, it's campaigning, horrible. And yeah, none of it is merit-based.
No, no. All right, so my next one, and I think this is the most important on my list, is The Bride of Frankenstein.
Okay.
From 1935. So this is the one that doesn't have any explicitly queer characters, but it has a queer-coded character that's famous, that was created for the film and was not in any novel. So Bride of Frankenstein is directed by James Whale, who is the best director of... This is the best Universal monster movie, and he's the best director of Universal movies. He did... And this is him at the height of his powers. So he did Frankenstein... Then he did...
He did the original Frankenstein?
Yes. Then he did the old Dark House, which people don't talk about because it's not there's no monster in it, but it's a horror movie. It's a lot of the same performers in that are in Bride of Frankenstein. Old Dark House is very good. And then he did Invisible Man, which we've done an episode about on PCMC, which has more of his sense of humor. He had a real... like sharp sense of humor that he put into these things. The original Frankenstein doesn't have it, but as he got more popular and more powerful, he did it. And that's why Bride of Frankenstein is so good, because he's at the height of his powers and he can kind of do whatever he wants. So he creates this character named Dr. Pretorius. And Dr. Pretorius is a different mad scientist, and he is played by Ernest Thesinger, who is just this extremely queer performer. He plays it like, if you compare him to, like, he does a lot of scenes with Henry Frankenstein, is what he's named in the,
which
is
so weird. Yeah,
yeah, like, he is so chewing up the scenery.
Henry Frankenstein is a character in it too.
Yes.
Okay.
But he is he doesn't want to do anything else, and then this Dr. Pretorius comes out of nowhere, and I just watched it this week. It's so good. And he shows up at his house, and the maid, played by the incredible actress, what's her name? Una O'Connor. She was in a lot of his stuff. She's very funny. She's always screaming and stuff. She's like, Pretorius, that's not a name. Which, like, the scholar in me is like, that's such a good thing to put in, like, a queer ass. Like, the her saying that's not a name is almost, from the get-go, marking him as not right.
Right.
So Dr. Pretorius comes in, and he's like, he's not like... He's got like an upper, like a stiff upper lip, but there's something very swishy about him.
Okay.
And he's like, I want to do...
Is he like flamboyant?
When he's... At times, but it's also coming from a like something reserved.
Okay.
You know what I mean? He's like, I want to continue your work. And he says, let me show you the experiences I've made. And this is where... At this point, James Whale just throws anything having anything to do with science out the window. He shows him, Dr. Pretorius takes out these little jars with little people in them. And he's like, I grew these people. And it's like little king and a little queen. And it's just the effect. By the way, for 1935, the effects in it are just, how did they do that? It's incredible. And his idea is like, if you could find the right bones and brain, I can grow the rest. So like, she's not made out of parts of different people.
She's grown in a lab.
And even like to look at like a real indicator of like that James Whale is doing whatever he wants now is look at Frankenstein compared to her. She's got the lightning in her hair. Yeah, she's just like raging cunt. It's great. And the same actress plays Mary Shelley in the opening.
Yes, I knew
which that. Is brilliant.
Which also Mary Shelley would have nothing to do with this.
Right.
Which is so funny.
You know, Dr. Pretorius, like, there's so many interesting things that mark him as queer. Like, everybody who, throughout both movies, everybody who ever sees the monster screams. there's one scene where Dr. Pretorius, the grave rob, and then he's like, you could go, I'm going to stay here. And he's like hanging out, he's like smoking a cigar, like drinking in the tomb. And then the monster walks up and he goes, oh, I didn't know you were here. So the fact that he doesn't scream is just such an incredible marker of what he is. Yeah. And then the monster sits down and he talks to him and it's like they're on a date almost. And then he like makes a little deal with the monster. He's like, I want to make a woman for you. And then they come up with a plan to steal Elizabeth Frankenstein to blackmail Henry into doing the monster. It's just, and also what you have the faithful part of the movie is all the stuff with the blind man. All that stuff from the first book. Where he's learning to talk, that's in this movie. Mm. So Bride of Frankenstein is just absolutely incredible movie. And it is...
So the interesting... you mentioned Elizabeth Frankenstein. I forget because I'm so much more familiar with the book that Elizabeth lives in the movie.
Yes. Yes.
Where in the book, I mean, like...
Right, famously, exactly.
He kills her.
That's his
ultimate revenge.
Right.
That's because... And I guess the seedling of Bride of Frankenstein is from the book also.
Right.
He says, like, if he wants a mate.
Right.
And then he says, we'll play at this game bride for bride.
Yeah,
which
means
I'll kill your wife since you won't give me a wife.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in the Mary Shelley's Frankenstein from the 90s, Robert De Niro, which is not actually Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Right.
If you remember that.
He
kills her and then reanimates her body to be Bride of a little like nods to Bride of Frankenstein.
Right.
And then she, I think, kills them all.
Right.
Which I think also happens in the original Frankenstein, right?
And
doesn't she kill them all by screaming really loudly or something? And then the place collapses? Is that Bride of Frankenstein in the original?
No, she does scream before she goes, but she screams, she completely rejects the monster. And he's heartbroken. And then weirdly, and this could be examined, he lets Henry go. He goes, you go. You live. We deserve to die. And he does something that explodes everything.
I thought she did.
And the monster, the bride, and Dr. Pretorius all die together. Hmm. He takes Pretorius with him, which is interesting.
Yeah.
It's also interesting, like, you and I did an episode on the original Frankenstein last Halloween or a couple Halloweens ago. And we talked about in that how, like, Henry has no interest in his fiance. Like, there's almost no procreation or anything even resembling heteronormativity in it. And the fact that they're making a bride for the monster is like some kind of an invocation of heteronormativity, but not because neither of them are truly born.
Right.
It's, you know, look, if you like, there's a great documentary called Queer for Fear. This is a big part of that documentary. This will always come up on lists. He's a very important queer filmmaker. He was openly gay in Hollywood at that time, which was like probably the only industry that you could be openly gay. He said of this movie, there's a lot of us in it. Mm. So it's, you know, it's a classic. It's great. It's incredible.
I've never seen it entirely.
It's fairly short. All the Universal movies.
The original Frankenstein movie is like 70 minutes.
It's amazing just to watch. Dr. Pretorius is the best part. And that actor is also in Old Dark House, which is like a weird, it's kind of like, it's almost Poe-ish. It's like a weird house. Like somebody like, it's kind of like the beginning of Rocky Horror. Like this couple, they go into this house and it's like this weird family. You're like, what's going on here? And he's like, I think the patriarch of the family. Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. It's really good.
All right. My next one, surprise, surprise, is another musical. What do you think I'm going to say?
Oh, I feel on the spot. Chicago? No.
No.
Is that explicitly a character?
Yes, yes.
Rent?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a little musical called Rent.
Ever
heard of it? No, I've seen the Broadway show once when it was still on in its original iteration.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the movie many, many, many times, and a lot of people don't love the movie. But you know what? I do.
Really? They don't?
Yeah, no. The movie famously like got most of the original cast.
Except for one, right?
One or two. And there was a lot of criticism that they were too old by that point to be playing the ages of the characters. But I think the movie's great. I mean, it's just it. Talk about like. It's called like a generation-defining Broadway show.
Stephanie, who was on PCM a few episodes ago,
I know she's a big Rent head.
She was on the was it film school memories episode.
Every time you say that, I think you're going to say film school rejects. Isn't that a thing?
I don't know. But she was a true redhead. Like before the movie, like the original production saw it. I don't know how many times, like really saw it over and over and over again. Like she was one of those people. She was there.
Yeah.
She was there
for it. She was there, baby.
She was there in the room.
I recently, sometimes I go on a Wild Hair and I Google things and I just send it in the chat.
Uh-huh.
And do you remember recently I went on this, like down this rabbit hole of Broadway TV commercials?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, remember this banger from the 90s? And it was the Rent commercial.
Oh.
It was on all the time. And then it'd be like, call Telecharge now.
Call Telecharge. Tonight, so you and I, we'll tell the audience, tonight you and I are going to the Winter Garden Theater, Now and Forever,
yes,
to see Death of a Salesman.
With queer icon Nathan Lane and Laurie Metcalf.
So, but no, my brain went there because of Winter Garden, the cat commercial, Forever.
Now and Forever.
Yeah. And it was there for like a million years.
The Winter Garden is one of those theaters that, I'm listening to a book about Broadway, I'm reading a book about Broadway right now. Winter Garden Theater is like one of those houses that's just like,
they do things for a long time.
In the recent years, has become like known as like a house of longevity because they had Mamma Mia for a million years and then Mamma Mia for a million years right after.
Yeah. But lately, because Beetlejuice was there in its first run.
Yeah.
This is not going to go forever. And I think Music Man was there too.
Yeah, it was.
And that wasn't a long
one. Yeah.
But yeah, tradition, like when you think of them, you think of Cats and Mamma Mia,
yeah,
which was forever.
For both of them were on for a long, yeah, really long time. Yeah, I love the music of Rent is great. It's a little bit melodramatic, of course. But I love the idea of, for those who haven't seen it, it's like an updating of La Boheme.
Yeah.
But on the Lower East Side, and the plague du jour is HIV and AIDS.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this also.
Yes.
My top two both have HIV and AIDS.
Okay.
As part of them. And I was like, oh.
My list is more fun.
Am I being too depressing?
No, I think it's a different experience. Like, my list is much more fun. Like, I've got more cartoons coming up.
I know. I'm really just depressing everyone. No,
whatever, man. It's just, this is what it is.
I also, I don't have it on here, but I also really love The Normal Heart. I mean, these things are important.
Oh, okay.
The Normal Heart, the Larry Kramer.
Yeah. I almost put, and then I was like, dude, is this really
a
favorite? Yeah. I was like, is this really a favorite of mine?
I taught Angels in America once. I don't know what I was thinking. I tried to teach it to high schoolers.
Oh, God.
I have to say, they liked it. Do I think they totally got it?
Yeah.
No. But I think that they enjoyed it. But then once we got to the point where I was like, okay, now they were like, that's the end. I was like, of part one. They were like, what's happening?
They were like, oh, like Harry Potter. It's a two-part play.
I had to do so much context building. Like, I had to be like, Ronald Reagan. This is Nancy Reagan.
Oh, right. You got to set the whole scene. This is the AIDS
crisis. Well, and then what I ended up doing, because it's a more accessible play, was the next year I taught the same unit with the same context supplements, but with The Normal Heart instead of Angels in America. Okay.
Did you tell them that Roy Cohn was Trump's?
They were fucking mind blown. Why is that not all we're talking about all the time?
That he was Trump's mentor?
That he was Trump's mentor.
And famously, Trump is a known pedophile. Why aren't we talking about that all the time?
And famously said, I'm not gay. I just fuck guys.
Yeah. And Trump's like, I'm not a pedophile. I just fuck children.
Yeah. I mean, and Roy Cohn's a character in the play. It's so
that scene
groundbreaking
with the doctor is incredible. With the doctor's like, you have AIDS. He's like, nah, I don't have AIDS.
Yeah,
gay people have AIDS. Yeah, and I'm not gay.
I'm not gay.
Right.
That's fucking Trump's mentor.
Yeah, that evil fuck. And he was much smarter than Trump. Trump's evil, but not that smart.
Yeah,
Cohn was very smart.
But it's funny, like I when I was like doing the context building, I was like, this is a character, but he was a real person. And then I was like, and it's not mentioned in the play, but he was the mentor of Donald Trump. And they were like, oh my fucking God.
This villain in this play.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Rent. You know, this is the first time I saw it was I saw the movie before I saw the play. And I don't know, it became an obsession of mine for like a year or more. I was just listening to the soundtrack.
Is it the soundtrack that does it?
Because
I feel like people, rent heads or have an, it's something obsessive about it.
Yeah. And I think obviously a huge part of it is the music.
Sure.
It's also like the message. I don't know, like forget regret.
Yeah. No day but today.
I had a friend who was with me on this obsession who got No Day But Today tattooed on her Either she either got No Day But Today or No Forget Regret, one of them, okay. in like the Rent font. Rent is it's also just so it's funny. The movie sets it in the 80s, which is I guess when it's supposed to take place, but the show itself is just so fucking 90s.
Oh yeah, Rent. Yeah,
I think like the post, like as millennials, we who grew up in New York, we were part of that like safe sex post age generation.
Yeah.
Which kids now or not. Mm. And that was, I don't know, just like part of just like the fabric of our lives.
Mm. Yeah.
At that, during that time.
Yeah. No. Yeah. You're right.
Especially cause we were growing up in it. I don't know if there's a point there, but it's just, it speaks to me.
AIDS is still an extreme problem, but somehow it's not at the forefront of our consciousness the way it was even in the 90s.
Because we haven't managed here in the United States. It's a huge problem elsewhere still.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Where like campaigns to educational campaigns to try and prevent it have not been as successful as they were here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, did you read John Green's book about tuberculosis?
No, it's on my list.
It's incredible. You really learn that, poverty has everything to do with all of these things.
Oh yeah.
We have like in that book, it's about tuberculosis, but his big thesis is like, how do we have this many people dying every year of something we cured?
Right. Right.
Because it's only cured here.
Right, right.
It's incredible.
The thing with that fascinates me about like HIV, AIDS, the Reagan 80s, there's a lot that fascinates me about it. One of the things is like when you put it all in context, like, and you see this in The Normal Heart talked about explicitly, like they had just gotten a taste of liberation.
Yes.
As a community. And then AIDS happened. It was like a little bit of acceptance. And then all of a sudden, now you're associated with this deathly plague.
Right.
Which is called originally GRID, gay-related immunodeficiency.
Yeah.
Which is like, this is a disease that kills gay people.
Didn't they also call it gay cancer at some point?
Not like officially, but yeah. And like, then it, like in Normal Heart, he's like, you know, we came out and we, you know, Stonewall happened and we got the world to look at us and now they're going to come for us. They're going to put us in camps. Mm. Like they're going to quarantine us. It's just so like the timing could not be worse, I think.
My favorite line in Normal Heart is when he's talking to the mayor's aide and he's like, what do we got to do to get him to read this? Staple it to some twink's cock?
Yeah. And then the guy goes, like, the mayor is not heterosexual. And they're like, oh, come on. I guess this should be Rent / No More Heart because for me they're together.
Sure,
but Rent is the one that was like my first love.
No More Heart's just a play.
It's just a great play. Yeah. Ed Koch. Listen, he had his good qualities, but the fact that I was gonna say the fact that he was just closeted forever, but who am I to judge? So was Paul Rubens.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Yeah.
I think Paul Rubens is like, I can't do anything related to children and be openly gay.
Yeah. I mean, he was already persecuted enough.
Yeah.
I
think on suspicion of him being gay.
Right. Well, there was like, they would conflate the idea of gayness and queerness with pedophilia.
They still do.
Yeah, they still do. Yeah. All right. Do you have any more on that?
No. No.
All right. So, my next one. Me and Anthony, we ordered Masters of the Universe donuts from Krispy Kreme. And that's apropos because my next one is She-Ra and the Princesses of Power.
We got to talk about how gay He-Man is.
He-Man's pretty gay. I think in some ways He-Man influenced Robert Smiley's ambiguously gay duo.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, people have been making jokes in
And Batman and Robin, too.
Yes. People have been making jokes in the trailer for the new movie. Skeletor says, you have the power, but you don't know how to use it. And then He-Man goes, oh, I know how to use it.
Yeah.
So there's gay. It's gay.
Well, I sent you just like a couple days ago, like gay social media is going nuts over like the actor. And then there's a part where he looks down at his abs.
Yeah.
And then the caption was like, this film is about to spark so many gay awakenings.
Right, right. When he turns into He-Man and he becomes muscular, he looks down and sees that he has abs. And he's like, whoa. Yeah. No, it's gonna change a lot of lives.
Yeah, it sure is. I hope a lot of like 11-year-old boys are ready for this.
Yeah. So He-Man's pretty gay. But She-Ra, so depending on, all right, so the creator, I'm talking about the show, the Netflix show from 2018.
Okay. Not that, the property writ large.
Yes, and not the original show. Although the creator of the 2018 She-Ra will say that they believe there was queerness baked into the original show that they were just exploiting more.
How?
Because there's at least two characters that are like life partners, and it's like they seem like they're married.
Okay.
And I believe there were more queer people working on She-Ra than on He-Man. I mean, She-Ra is like, people call it like a girl He-Man, but it's also like a pastel He-Man. Okay. Like, even her planet looks like his planet, but like pastel. But anyway, She-Ra the Princess of Power, 2018 one is produced and showran by Nate Stevenson, also goes by N.D. Stevenson, who is a, they are a trans person. They also worked on the comic Lumberjanes, which I almost put on this list.
Oh, yeah.
So in this, She-Ra's gay, and...
Is she?
Yes.
She's explicitly gay?
Yes, but it's one of those things where it's not until the last episode. I mean, she's explicitly gay, but she don't kiss another woman until the last episode. Okay. And... The main antagonist is Catra, who she was raised with and is like this cat woman. And, they were both bad guys because she was a bad guy who was brainwashed and then she turned good. Mm-hmm. And so the Catra feels betrayed that She-Ra left her. So like they're constantly fighting in the show, but it's because there's this intimate pain between them of like a breakup. And then, all the princesses get together and their powers unite. They literally become like a rainbow.
Oh,
and like this little rainbow. It's chock-a-block with like very queer imagery too.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of explicitly queer characters. The character Bo, he has two dads. There's a non-binary character who is a shapeshifter, which is interesting. Spoiler alert, the end, well, it's not spoiler alert because it's off Netflix now and it's nowhere. It's not
really?
On DVD. It's gone.
They disappeared it?
It's gone.
Why?
That's what happens
That's
now.
What happens to a lot of queer shows.
Did you see,
like Grease, Rise of the Pink Ladies.
Hannah Einbender has said she's working hard to try to get a DVD Blu-ray of Hacks because she doesn't want it to disappear. But that happens now. And, but anyway, in the end, her and Catra end up back together. And, yeah.
Do you think it's scrubbing has anything to do with it being queer? Because people think that about, like I just mentioned, that Grease show, which was queer.
I do. I think it does happen to more shows besides queer shows.
I think it happens a lot to shows that are queer or shows that are about women or...
Sure.
You as part of the fandom.
Yes.
I'd like to know your perspective on this or your, insight. Was there like a neckbeardy reaction to the show when it first came out?
That's a wonderful question. Actually, no.
Oh, good.
Because there's a lot of fans that are fans of both, like me, but there is a division between He-Man fans and She-Ra fans. And the He-Man fans, they just will ignore She-Ra if they want to.
Okay.
So no, honestly, it was more love than anything.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
And I've said this before on the show, but the thing that I think is so incredible is Master of the Universe begins as a toy line. So it begins as a consumer product. And Then a cartoon is made about it. And He-Man is all about gender binary and gender conformity.
His name is literally He-Man.
Yeah. But then She-Ra go all these years later. Now this She-Ra show only had two figures ever made for it. They're behind you. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so it wasn't about making toys. And it's so incredibly... progressive in terms of, it's amazing to see it go from its origins to where it ended up.
Any explanation as to why he's He-Man but she's She-Ra
instead of She-Her
or She-Woman?
I don't know. I think they just they
doesn't roll off the tongue, I guess.
Yeah, I think they just were like, I mean, it somehow denotes her as more powerful because Ra means God.
Ooh.
So okay. She's like She God, but I think it just didn't want it to sound
okay
interesting.
Like yeah. Okay.
The director of this new movie has already said, like someone said, who would you cast as She-Ra? And he said, I don't want to say that because I'm holding out that I'll get them. So he said openly that he wants to make a She-Ra movie and continue.
Live action?
Yes.
Who do you think it will be?
Who would be a great She-Ra? Oh, I had a good thought the other day.
Michelle Williams. The incomparable Oscar winning.
She's Michelle a bit Williams. Old for the role. She's got, remember, she's got to be the twin of this guy. I don't know. But there's, you know, plenty of people that I think could really do it. And they will. If this movie's successful at all, they'll do it.
I just Googled to see what AI slop has to say about this. I Googled who should play She-Ra. And it says, for live action.
Oh, I know who it is.
She-Ra. Fans and critics frequently point to action-proven stars like Florence Pugh, okay,
she's or good.
Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, I just remembered that.
I will.
She's not.
I'll riot.
I loved Immaculate.
I think she's a, here's what I'm going to say about Sydney Sweeney. I actually think she's a good actress, despite being a despicable person, it seems. Yeah. But no, I don't think she's right for this.
No, I don't want her as She-Ra.
Other popular choices among fan castings include Margot Robbie.
Too old. I mean, she'd be incredible. Hot take. No, I'm sorry. I'm just.
She's too old. You heard it here first.
Oh my God, no. It's because they're He-Man's twins.
I'm kidding.
He's twins.
Yeah. And they're supposed to be like 20, right?
Yeah.
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Oh, she would be great.
Or Freya Allen. I don't know who that is.
I don't know who that is either. They'll do it. If this movie.
I will say that the animation, she looks like Margot Robbie.
Yeah, for sure.
Like a lot.
Well, some people are, you know what, now you're reminding me, some neckbeards were mad because if you look at the way she looks in the new show, which is again behind you, it's less like showing her boobs. She has flatter, she has a more androgynous look.
Okay.
And people were like mad, and then everyone else was like, I'm sorry you can't jerk off to She-Ra anymore.
You watch the old stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I guess I'll do my honorable mentions. I kind of want to fly through these because there's not much to say, which is why they're honorable mentions. Sure. But these are just things that I really loved. The Hours.
Sure.
I know, like prestige drama, but I really liked it. Giovanni's Room by James Baldwin.
Yeah. Never read it.
Oh, God. So good. I put Brokeback Mountain here.
Mm-hmm.
I considered putting it on my list, but then I was like, am I putting this on the list because it's important or because it's my favorite? And the thing is, it's like not one of my favorite movies.
It's hard to watch.
It's so hard to watch, but it's incredible.
Yeah.
And I also love how defensive Heath Ledger was of it. Mm. Like the Oscars wanted him to, like, him and Jake Gyllenhaal to make a joke about it. And he was like, absolutely not. Yeah. We will not be making any jokes about this movie. But my number one is a poem called Heartbeats by a poet named Melvin Dixon.
Okay, tell me.
It's kind of short. Should I just...
Go ahead and read it.
Okay, I'm going to read it. I'm going to not do this any justice.
Sure.
But I want to share it with you. This is a poem I've taught many times as part of that unit I was talking about before by Melvin Dixon. It's from 19... it was published in 1995, but he actually died in 1982, so I think it's from the early 80s. It was originally written. No, I'm sorry. He died in 1992. I think it's from 1980 something.
Okay.
So I want you to listen to it. Work out, 10 laps, chin ups, look good, steam room, dress warm, call home, fresh air, eat right, rest well, sweetheart, safe sex, sore throat, long flu, hard nodes, beware. Test blood, count cells, reds thin, whites low. Dress warm, eat well, short breath, fatigue. Night sweats, dry cough, loose stools, weight loss. Get mad, fight back, call home, rest well. Don't cry, take charge, no sex, eat right. Call home, talk slow, chin up, no air. Arms wide, nodes hard, cough dry, hold on. Mouth wide, drink this, breathe in, breathe out. No air, breathe in, no air. Black out, white rooms, head hot, feet cold. No work, eat right, CAT scan, chin up. Breathe in, breathe out, no air, no air. Thin blood, sore lungs, mouth dry, mind gone. 6 months, 3 weeks, can't eat, no air. Today, tonight, it waits for me. Sweetheart, don't stop. Breathe in, breathe out.
Wow.
So I just really, really love that poem, even though it's clearly about somebody being diagnosed with HIV and then AIDS. What I love about it is that it's called Heartbeats, and the entire thing is...
Bum, bum.
Bum, 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 bum.
But except for fatigue.
Well, but that's still two beats.
Fatigue. Oh, I see.
There's a few that are one word, two syllables, but the vast majority of the words are all one syllable words.
Wow.
Today, Tonight.
Yes.
And I really, the part that I love about this poem is, like, early on, he's in perfect health. He's, like, going to the gym. Yeah. And then it's sweetheart. And then at the end, it's sweetheart, don't stop. So it's sweetheart, don't stop, like sex.
Yeah.
And at the end, sweetheart, don't stop.
Ah.
Like, don't stop beating.
Wow.
It's, again, super fucking depressing.
But it's amazing.
I think it's so amazing.
What economy in telling a narrative
right?
of that size.
Right. It tells a whole, you get a picture of this guy.
Like, right.
His entire life and this trajectory from health to death.
Yeah. Wow.
Or like right on the precipice of death.
Did the poet die of
AIDS?
Yeah,
he died of AIDS, yeah.
Wow.
And I put that as my
I'm sorry.
I put that as my number one because I just truly like treasure it. Like I love that poem. I think it's my favorite poem. God, my list is so dour. I'm so sorry, everybody.
No, it's
what a
fine.
Depressing fucking list.
Happy Pride, everybody.
Happy Pride.
It's Port of Pride. It's Port of Pride.
It is. Listen, Pride was a riot. It started as a riot. It's a power movement. Never forget that.
That's right.
Fuck you, Target.
Yeah.
So let's go to your number one, which is surely to be like this Mickey Mouse episode.
This is going
to
be
a stark.
It's going to be a huge.
What a turn this is going about to be.
Yeah. It's huge 180. Well, I have one honorable mention, which is Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Neither of us have John Waters on our list. And I have to say, for me, it's because I'm a bit of a John Waters poser. I've read his books. I watch every interview of his.
Fact that you've read his books makes him – nobody's read his books.
Oh, okay. But I haven't seen all of his films. Like, I've never seen Pink Flamingos.
You've never seen
Pink Flamingos? Yeah, I know. I've seen a lot of his films, not all of them.
Watch it, like, next. Today.
Yeah. So, but none of us have him on the list. That feels wrong.
I feel like a poser because I think my favorite John Waters is Serial Mom.
Yeah, probably
which is
me
like
too.
Latter John Waters, but.
Right. The early stuff is the real insane
the real,
stuff. The
real gritty shit.
Yeah. I've seen multiple Maniacs, which is.
Okay.
Someone gets fucked with a rosary inside of. They filmed it inside of a church.
Perfect. Have you seen the original Hairspray with Ricky Lake?
Yes. I love that, too.
That's great.
Yeah. So my number one is a Doctor Who episode. very close to Mickey Mouse. So this is an episode named Rogue. It aired in Pride. It aired June 6, 2024, 2 years ago. But it's colloquially known as the Bridgerton episode.
Okay.
The Doctor, who at this point is played by Shuchi Gatwa, who was the first Black Doctor.
Oh, is he he was a Ken, right?
In Barbie? Yes, he was one of the Kens. So the Doctor played by Shuchi Gatwa and
Are we still in his reign or has he moved on now?
No, he's moved on now. He had two seasons. Hmm. But it might be over now or taking a long break.
Really?
Yeah. This was all on Disney Plus too, which is interesting. So Shuchi Gatwa was the first Black Doctor, but also like he's the first like queer Doctor, which is like the kind of like Trojan horse of it all. Because
was she not the woman not queer?
The
queer coded?
The companion?
Yeah. No. The woman, the female Doctor.
She was queer coded. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like yeah, she fell in love with a female.
Yeah.
He's the only Doctor who like changes his clothes every episode. Okay. You know, he is very. Openly, there's no real coding in a way.
Right.
And this is the first episode where the Doctor kisses another man, not as some kind of joke, like a real romantic kiss. So the Doctor and his companion, Ruby, go to 1813, and it's because she's a fan of, they quote Bridgerton in it. She's a fan of Bridgerton. So he brings her to 1813, so they go to like a ball.
Okay.
And they're dressed up nice and they're dancing and she's like loving it. And it's like Bridgerton in the fact that like there are people, all sorts of people of color in roles they wouldn't be in. They're playing modern songs in the orchestra. And the Doctor meets a character named Rogue, who's a bounty hunter played by Jonathan Groff. And from the get-go, and the General Graf originally thinks the doctor is the bad guy he's looking for, so he arrests him. But, like, there's constant flirting. It's very, very cute. It's very funny. They're constantly flirting with each other. The doctor sort of, it kind of marks him right away because he takes him to his ship, and the doctor's like, let's see what you're listening to, because he has the sonic screwdriver that can do anything.
Yeah.
So he's like, let's listen to, and he's listening to Kylie Minogue. And he's like, oh, this is, and he's like, turn that off. And he keeps putting it back on and dancing to it. And then he realizes that the doctor is not the bad guy. And then they're working together. And they realize that the villains are these aliens that take other people's bodies. And they realize what they're doing is they're cosplaying. The aliens also have probably seen Bridgerton.
Oh.
And so they are playing at it too.
That's fun.
So that he's like, all right, so what they like is drama. We have to make drama. So the doctor, so Jonathan Groff and the doctor dance together. So two men dancing, and everybody's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then the doctor like makes a scene. He's like, how dare you, sir? How dare you tell me you love me, whatever. And then Jonathan Groff gets down on his knees and like gives him a ring, like proposes to him, and like making this big, so because he knows then they'll leave and then the monsters will want to take them and right. then they can get them. And they have a real kiss, like a real romantic, sweet kiss, which is incredible for Doctor Who.
Right.
I mean, think about old British people like watching this and on a Sunday afternoon and being like, what now? I mean, the first episode with this doctor, he's wearing a dress.
This is really funny, but you said what now? But my friend just told me the other day that her dad, when he hasn't heard something, he goes, shot who? what now? Sorry.
Yeah, the first scene of this doctor's first episode, he's wearing a dress. Mm-hmm. So he'll wear anything too.
Okay.
And it's just, so you can make the argument that all modern Doctor Who is queer and campy. The modern Doctor Who was brought back and produced and showran by Russell T. Davies, who created Queer as Folk. And has a very gay sensibility, and he made the show much more liberal. And again, like when you get to be at the height of your powers, his Disney—it's so weird confluence of things, because the show with the female doctor like didn't get a lot of ratings, so they were like, let's bring back this guy who's really popular. You can do whatever you want, and then Disney comes in and like, here's a ton of money, we want Doctor Who. So you've got Disney, which is Disney, right?
Right.
And then you've got him, who's got nothing to lose at this point. He did Doctor Who for 10 years, then went on.
Yeah.
But he's like, okay, I'll come back. You just let me do whatever I want. And they're like, yeah, sure, sure. And so he makes his comeback season really isn't like his earlier stuff. It's way more campy, way more surreal. The stories are much less, like, action-y. This Doctor is just so openly queer. And Disney did not get what they thought they paid for. It did two seasons, and then Disney ended the deal. So now it's sort of up in the air is whether we'll go back to BBC, whether BBC wants to stop it now, you know, because there was a 14-year break between the original series and the revival. They're like, maybe it needs another break. Maybe that's why the ratings are down.
Huh.
But so Russell T. Davies has always brought, you know, there's always been queer characters. They've also played a lot with gender, the fact that the doctor's species can change genders and stuff. So, and it's just, this is my favorite because it's so fun. I just watched it again. It's like, this is one of the most fun episodes of Doctor Who.
I feel like, I don't really like Doctor Who, but I feel like I would enjoy that.
I like Jonathan Groff a lot.
I love Jonathan Groff.
He's great in it. He's very cute in it. I wish they had done more with him. They kind of end him in that. This happens a lot if the doctor has a love interest where, like, it just ends with that. Like, at the end, there's a trap and the companion's in it and the doctor's crying. This doctor cried in every episode.
Huh.
His companion's in it and he's crying. So Jonathan Groff, like, takes her place and then he just says, find me. And then he goes. So so it's like, it's out there that he could come back, but that's basically it.
Yeah.
But he wears the ring. The doctor, the last thing you see is the doctor puts the ring on.
Uh-huh.
So it's almost like they're in some way married.
Huh. And did you wear it in further episodes?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I love Jonathan Groff. He's, to me, he's the best part of Hamilton. as the king.
Oh, you only like the one white guy? Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, okay,
last night, actually, we had an event at school last night, and there was like a karaoke thing, and the kids were singing Hamilton, and I was like, oh, I want to sing. And they were like, who do you want? What do you want to sing? And I was like, I want to sing the King song. And they were like, that is so you. Multiple kids are like, that's actually perfect for you. And I was like, is it because I'm white? Is it because I'm gay? Like,
that's hilarious. Yeah, we did it. Happy Pride, everybody. Happy Pride. Listen, it's a tough world right now.
It sure is.
But keep your head up.
I'm looking forward to the memes. The memes are one of my favorite parts of Pride every year.
Yeah.
And they've already started. I just sent one. Hold on. The memes and like the tweet. I say tweets, but really they're threads because I'm not on Twitter anymore because it's fucking toxic.
Yeah.
But I just saw one today that I was like, oh, Pride is right around the corner. Somebody put on threads, it's almost Pride Month. So if you're cishet, fix it.
Fix it.
I love the ones where it's like, anyone caught being straight will be reported to the FBI.
That's hilarious. But I'm so glad you said that because you remind me of something else I want to bring up. One last thing. In Twin Peaks, in the original Twin Peaks, there's a trans character played by David Duchovny. And honestly, it's kind of played funny, but it's not crazy funny, but it's kind of played funny or weird.
Played like he's dressed up?
Yeah.
Okay.
But in Twin Peaks The Return from like 2015, 2016, whatever it was, that character comes back and
David Duchovny
as a trans character comes back. So he's M to F, so he's dressed.
Yeah.
So and he shares a scene with David Lynch. David Lynch is in it as a character. He's always been in it.
Yeah, yeah.
As the FBI agent. And he has this line where he's talking about him and he's like, when I met you, you're a wild young thing. And those other agents, those clown comics, I told them, fix your hearts or die. So fix your hearts or die has become a meme. It's on t-shirts and stuff. It's attributed to Lynch, which why not? He actually wrote it.
Yeah.
So fix your hearts or die. There you go.
There you go.
We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.